it's difficult to see. I mean, business is still there, right? The work's still happening. Everyone's still recovering from COVID, spending the money they didn't spend. So the work's still there. People are just being more frugal and a bit more considerate.
Amid widespread protests, there are now concerns of the rise of far-right groups in Europe. The grim economic outlook in Europe comes amid warnings of a looming economic recession. The head of the World Trade Organization says the world is sliding into a recession due to multiple overlapping crises. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have also downgraded their global growth forecasts. The recession is a result of a number of factors that have compounded each other. The recession has been triggered by an energy crunch, surging food prices, and bottlenecks in global trade.
The world is in a very difficult place at this time. We have a situation in which we are grappling with multiple crises. I often refer to it as a polycrisis, simultaneous exogenous shocks hitting the world. We have security shocks, we have climate shocks, we have energy shocks, we have food price shocks, and all of this hitting countries at the same time. So we cannot afford to do business as usual.
If energy prices, if there's disruptions during winter, and the energy prices go up even further, we have a scenario in which an increase in 50% of gas prices will lead to a reduction in GDP in Europe by 1.4%. And so this is a huge number. So that means that the European economy for sure will be in recession.
Some of these factors were triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic, but the Ukraine war has made them worse. China's pandemic policies and rampant inflation have worsened the economic outlook. But investors are particularly concerned about the prospect of interest rates in the U.S.
Just as U.S. investors are completely comfortable with the Fed's strategy, there's now this concern that the rest of the world is not following on. So it's a real concern about the resolve of European central banks to fight inflation, and particularly the UK, and how that might spread to others.
If Federal Reserve raises interest rates aggressively, the US could head into a recession, which could have significant ramifications not only for the US, but also its allies in Europe.
The Russian-built Nord Stream pipelines to bring gas to Europe via the Baltic Sea have sustained unprecedented damage in a single day. The pipelines burst in several locations in the exclusive economic zones of Denmark and Sweden, while neither of them was in operation amid an energy standoff between Russia and Europe. Following the explosions, a Polish politician suggested the United States was behind the sabotage of the two Nord Stream pipelines linking Russia to Germany. In his Twitter account, former Polish Foreign Minister Bronisław Sikorski wrote, "Thank you, USA," while sharing a photo of the massive gas leak in the waters of the Baltic Sea. Sikorski added that, quote, "There's no shortage of pipeline capacity for taking gas from Russia to Western Europe, including Germany." The first tweet was shared thousands of times and sparked criticism against Sikorski. The Polish politician is now a member of the European Parliament. He's a former UK citizen and serves as a distinguished statesman at the Centre for Strategic and International Studies and a senior fellow at Harvard's Centre for European Studies.
It seems at one level inconceivable that the Russians would wish to damage their own pipelines in this way, particularly given that Putin has talked about Nord Stream 2 being ready to go. And why don't the Germans, you know, simply drop their ban on using Nord Stream 2 and accept the gas, since they've run short? So from that point of view, it does seem bizarre. My initial interpretation yesterday was that this was possibly an effort to signal to NATO countries, to Ukraine's allies, that Russia has this capacity. It coincided with the opening of this new Norwegian pipeline to Poland. And it's, one might say, a remarkable coincidence. If Russia has that capability and is prepared to use it, it would, of course, trigger Article 5 of the NATO treaty. And so that would be, even the threat of being able to do something like that would be a serious escalation.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
The tweets have raised speculations that Washington may have been behind the sabotage attack. It's now emerged that the CIA told Berlin weeks ago that the Russian Nord Stream infrastructure was vulnerable. On Tuesday morning, gas prices hiked further in Europe, raising concerns over the bloc's energy security. There are mounting concerns in the EU over how the continent is now going to cope with the energy crisis it's facing.
It certainly suggests that the market is in for a rough ride over the coming few months. I think there was a lot of, in recent months, prices have come down quite a lot in terms of, I mean, it's still extremely high, but down from an all-time high in late August. And I think any belief that winter was not looking that bad in terms of supply and demand has certainly been thrown out the window now as a result of the developments in the last few days.
The crisis has also highlighted the deep-running dispute between the US and EU over the bloc's energy ties with Russia. For years, EU countries, especially Germany, had developed close energy ties with Russia in a bid to sustain economic growth. The United States, the bloc's main security partner, was not happy over the policy and pressured them to abandon Russia's energy sector. Washington was trying to keep the EU reliant on the US and reduce Russia's influence there. East European countries were also not happy with the deepening energy ties between Russia and the bloc. The war in Ukraine has provided a unique opportunity for the regime in Washington to pressure the EU for its own long-term strategic benefits. And the policy has come at a great cost for the European Union and its citizens. There are now concerns of a recession in the EU. Inflation is also running rampant, and discontent across the continent is historically high. Far-right parties have already made big gains in Sweden and Italy, and there are also concerns of further tilt to the right due to Europe's multiple crises. It now appears that the US is taking Europe down a path of economic and political destruction due to the Ukraine conflict.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamidi. Islamidi. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear listeners welcome to another episode of Youth Station this is Asma your humble host and here with me I have my dear co-host
Zainab Askari السلام عليكم dear listeners
وعليكم السلام
how are you Asma
just fine well life is moving we have to move as well
yes
so we're going with the flow
yes
In today's episode, we're going to talk about something very interesting. I don't know if it happened to you, Zainab, or not, but as a child, since I have four brothers, I used to compare myself to them. The rights they have and the rights I do not.
Okay.
For example, they had this right to go out for a longer time, but I had to stay at home with my mother.
Okay.
Or if I had the right to go out, it was some very temporary time.
Poor Asma.
And there's some restrictions. I had to go back very soon.
All right.
When I was a kiddo, actually, that was bugging me too much.
All right.
But
As you grew up?
Yes, as I grew up, I started to realize that maybe they had their reasons for that.
So you now, found the reasons.
Has it ever happened to you?
Of course. Like as a child, so much happened to me. I don't know. Shall I say unfortunately or fortunately? I was a second child. So
you already had rights.
We had no. We were three sisters at that time. Like, elder was given more response, and she was given more care, basically. And they would say she's elder one.
Yeah.
And the younger one, they would not allow me to beat her or like to be inhuman to her, because they would say, "Oh, she's your younger sister."
Yes.
So I would always, you know, ask myself, so where do I stand?
Yes, exactly.
She's given more rights because she's elder. And this one is given more rights because she's younger.
So you have experienced another format of rights.
Where do I stand? Why don't they never see since you're middle one?
Yes, exactly.
So I was like being the middle sister. I always had
So
this.
I guess the audience can relate.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I would always say to myself, why don't they behave with me the way they behave with the elder one and the younger one? So yes, by the time I grew up, I realized they were right.
There are some reasons behind every single thing
the
parents say. So from a very early age, we start to get into the meaning of justice.
Yes.
And human rights.
Yes.
But when we are young, just as we were talking about, when we are kiddos, we do not understand the true meaning of justice. We think that justice is the same as equality.
Yes.
Which is not.
Which is not, definitely.
Yeah. Now, some people start to say that equality is exactly the same as having justice.
Equality can be justice sometimes, but justice cannot be equality all the time.
Problematic, I guess.
No. Equality could be justice sometimes.
Yes, yes, yes.
But justice cannot be equality all the time.
Most of the time.
No, I would like, say, for example, my mother would always get one big, so many meters of clothes, but of one design. And she would make dresses of those meters of clothes for all three sisters of us.
Mm-hmm.
So there was equality, and here there was justice in our clothing.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when our fourth sister came to the world, she was very, very young.
Yeah.
My mother would not feed us the same thing she would feed her.
Yes.
So here, she would give her what she deserves, what she needs, basically.
Yeah.
And she would feed us what we need.
This is justice, I guess,
There was no equality. Yeah. There was no equality. So we don't have to actually confuse the two terms.
It is a perplexing concept. But just as I said, you know, there are too many people who would mix them together and try to show that there's
one thing. It's actually media that's mixing.
Yeah, yeah. Try to make it look like one, but it is not. Because sometimes, I guess all the people have experienced that in their lives, even in their personal lives. Sometimes justice is not equality.
Yes.
And sometimes equality is not justice.
Yes. They're two different things. But
yeah, exactly.
Equality
could
be justice, but justice cannot be equality all the time.
Well, I'll give you another example. Now, a rich person who has gone through a little of distress and difficulties would get into the same university that a poor person who has gone through too much of difficulties and obstacles. He or she has fought too much of different barriers. Now they get into the same university. They sit in the same class.
Okay.
On paper, when you are practicing justice, you would call this injustice.
Yes.
But what happens is that this is equality.
Yeah.
Because they both have tried for the same, they have aimed for the same thing and they have reached it.
Yeah.
So this is equal, but this is not justice.
Justice. One more example to make it more clear for our audiences. For example, there's a gunman who killed one or two people or even masses of people, what we see in Western shootings. Okay. Mm-hmm. How much time did he spend to kill people?
In a heartbeat. It doesn't take too much.
So if he is punished, if he is put in jail only for these minutes, Would we say that justice was done over here?
Of course not.
Because we will say like he committed crime for...
And he killed human beings.
He committed crime for some minutes, just for some minutes. And now he's given a lifetime sentence. Do we say injustice was done or justice was done?
Of course it is not justice.
Yeah, it's not justice. It's injustice if he's kept in custody only for those minutes. So equality is not justice.
Yeah, equality is not justice.
Equality is something like you are paying for the crime for the same minutes. Mm-hmm. Like he committed crime for, like even we say as Muslims, mm-hmm. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says us repeatedly in Quran, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. For this crime, there's hellfire.
Yeah.
We can't claim to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tomorrow that I committed a sin for a few minutes, for a few seconds.
But so, those few minutes and seconds have got so much of consequences.
Exactly. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is consequently telling us. So that's justice,
mm-hmm.
that he's telling us. He's merciful, he's kind, that he's telling us punishment of the crime.
So Zainab, keep what you have in your mind because we're going to go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Thank you, dear listeners.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station. Here we are talking about justice and equality, which
yes.
is a very perplexing topic.
Yeah, and we reached a conclusion that justice
is not always equality.
Yeah, equality may be justice sometimes,
yeah.
or maybe all the time.
They are different in different occasions. Because
no, equality, even equality can't be justice all the time.
So equality is not justice all the time, and justice is not equality most of the times.
Yes.
And I just talked about an example. I said that, actually, for those who are getting to us right now, I would say that we're talking about justice. We said that many times this happens, the two people are put in the same situation, but they do not have the same background. Like, for example, a person wants to get into university. Two person try to get into the same university.
Yes.
One of them has gone through too much of difficulties. He has fought the beasts of the world in order to get into that university.
I understand.
And the other, through prosperity and through peace
Money.
Of mind, he got into that university. Let's call it peace of mind.
Yeah.
And not put it like in money. Because then that would be so much sad.
With less struggles.
Yeah, with less struggles. Get into the same university. Now, these are sitting on the same chairs at the same university, breathing the same air, while the other one has done too much effort to
yeah.
get into the same place. Now, how should justice be applied into these two people? Do you think there would be any time for these two people to get into justice?
Just this guy who did so many struggles in
mm-hmm.
life, entering this university is in itself a justice because, you know, I tell my university rules, the university I read in, we had some of the seats that were reserved for scheduled caste, that were reserved for the handicapped people,
mm-hmm.
that were reserved for the sports personalities, like that were reserved for the culturally active people.
Yeah.
So we had a very few seats reserved for them. So yes, even if you do so many struggles in life, but you put all your efforts and hard work, you have a chance to enter university through these seats, like the government is giving you those chances.
So you mean
to
justice is when the government try to help those people?
You are provided education loans.
Yeah, the loans
it's
are
like
very important.
It's your wish to reach university,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yeah.
But if you stopped midway, be that by government or be that by any other force or any other power, that means justice was not applied.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're provided education loans, when you're provided those special reserved
seats, facilitate them with some alternatives.
Yeah, so when you have those special seats, like for example, I really like this quality of my university. I read in University
mm-hmm.
of Kashmir that we have some seats very much reserved for the physically challenged people. So if you're
yeah.
physically challenged, you're already down mentally, you're already down physically. Now there should be someone who should uplift you.
Yeah.
Who should tell you, no, you can move on. The world is going on.
In order
on and
for
you know,
justice to
yes,
be
so
accomplished.
Here justice is applied. I must say,
mm-hmm.
yes, they both enter into the same university. The justice
yeah.
is already applied when you actually enter university because there could be so many hindrances where you have not even entered yet.
Yeah.
So then your hard work pays for you. And
exactly.
when you enter the university, it's not all like, okay, some people have money. They can buy everything with that. But even your hard work will not go waste.
So the money that they spend for the seat they take in that university is going to be substituted with the loans and the helps that the government and that university administration is going to give the poor person who is getting into university.
What actually will pay off at the end of the day will be your hard work. Because tomorrow, for your money or something, you won't be appointed somewhere on a very big seat. Yeah. You may be adjusted somewhere, but you won't be appointed on a very big position unless and until you don't have that capability.
And after
because capability is what matters.
Yeah, that is what matters. And after all, we know that God is the only one who's going to make justice happen in this world.
Yes.
So also we have it in the Holy Book of Quran that the world is going to be ruled by Mustadhafin, that are the poor people who have never had a chance to have a voice in this world. So this is for the utopian world that is going to happen after the appearance of
Imam Mahdi.
Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu farajah. So we talked about justice and equality. We figured out that justice is not going to be accomplished through equality.
Yeah.
And many times equality is not justice.
Yeah, it's misunderstood sometimes.
And it's a hallucination that sometimes people make that a woman and a man are equal, therefore justice has happened between the two of them. No. Men and women are different. Now, actually, this
had
is
they been
an,
equal,
another
they would
topic.
Have been physically equal as well.
Yeah, this is another story, totally.
But
I'm just giving a hint that the propaganda that is trying to make men and women the same is very wrong because they're not the same. Women and men are not physically the same. And this actually was a slogan of the time when the Industrial Revolution happened. They wanted to use women as well as men.
Yeah.
That's why they brought this equality and the story of justice into the world. Justice of women. In the name of women, they are going to achieve their goals.
Yes.
So that's all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Justice is going to be accomplished when Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is going to appear in this world.
So let's see. May Allah hasten his reappearance.
Of course, inshallah. And inshallah we'd be alive to see those peaceful, blissful days.
Inshallah.
And dear listeners, thank you for listening. I hope you're not tired and I hope you enjoyed it already. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's new title of Prime Minister is simply a legal cover to gain immunity from legal prosecution, according to its many critics. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Agence France-Presse tells us more about the story. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's new title of Prime Minister announced this week could prove more significant abroad than inside the kingdom, where he already wields enormous power. The appointment by royal decree comes ahead of a deadline for US President Joe Biden's administration to weigh in on whether Prince Mohammed qualifies for immunity from lawsuits filed in American courts of law. The 37-year-old de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, the world's biggest crude exporter, has been targeted in multiple such lawsuits in recent years, notably over the 2018 murder of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the kingdom's Istanbul consulate, which temporarily turned him into a pariah in the West. His lawyers have argued in court filings that he sits at the apex of Saudi Arabia's government and thus qualifies for legal immunity. Human rights activists and government critics immediately speculated this week that making Prince Mohammed bin Salman prime minister was a bold-faced attempt to strengthen the immunity claim and skirt legal exposure. Sarah Leah Whitson, executive director of NGO Khashoggi-founded Democracy for Arab World Now, or DAWN, told Agence France-Presse it was a last-ditch effort to conjure up a new title for him, in other words, a title-washing ploy. In October of 2020, 2 years after Jamal Khashoggi's murder, DAWN filed a complaint in the United States along with Khashoggi's fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, accusing the Saudi Crown Prince of involvement in a conspiracy that led to Khashoggi being kidnapped, bound, drugged, tortured, and assassinated. Last year, President Biden declassified an intelligence report that found the Saudi Crown Prince had approved the operation against Jamal Khashoggi, an assertion that Saudi authorities have denied. The legal threats to Prince Mohammed bin Salman in United States courts of law go beyond Khashoggi. He was also named in lawsuit filed by Saad al-Jabri, a former top intelligence official who fell out of favor as Prince Mohammed bin Salman maneuvered to become first in line to the throne in 2017. That complaint accuses Prince Mohammed bin Salman of trying to lure Saad al-Jabri back to Saudi Arabia from exile in Canada. Then, when that didn't work, deploying a hit squad to kill him on Canadian soil, a plot foiled when most of the would-be assailants were turned back at the border. In yet another case, Prince Mohammed bin Salman was accused by Lebanese journalist Qada Uwais of involvement in a scheme to hack her mobile device and disseminate stolen personal images to defame her and prevent her from reporting on human rights issues. The immunity question appeared to come to a head over the summer when a U.S. judge gave the Biden administration until 1st of August to say whether it believed Prince Mohammed qualified for immunity from prosecution. After Joe Biden visited Saudi Arabia in July, abandoning a previous pledge to turn Saudi Arabia into a pariah state, his administration requested an additional 60 days to decide whether to weigh in on the matter. The new deadline falls no later than Monday, 3rd of October. Britain's Guardian newspaper tells us more about the story. The Biden administration is seeking a 45-day delay in a court proceeding in which it has been asked by a U.S. judge whether it believes Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman could be granted sovereign immunity in a case involving the murder of the dissident Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Representatives from the U.S. Justice Department said in a legal notice filed on Friday that the department was seeking the extension after Saudi Arabia announced in a press release last week that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had been named as Prime Minister. Critics of the Saudi government said they believed the new designation was a maneuver designed to try to establish sovereign immunity protection for the 37-year-old prince, who is facing a civil case in the United States for his alleged role in the murder of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The legal case, which is being heard in a district court in Washington, D.C., had been filed against Prince Mohammed by Hatice Cengiz, Jamal Khashoggi's fiancée, and Dawn, a pro-democracy group founded by Jamal Khashoggi before he was murdered. The case has put the Biden administration in legal and diplomatic bind. The U.S. president entered the White House promising to make the Crown Prince accountable for Khashoggi's murder and to make him a pariah. But Joe Biden has already abandoned that pledge in favor of pursuing other political and foreign policy objectives. In a trip to Saudi Arabia this summer, President Biden fist-bumped the Crown Prince even after his own administration released a declassified intelligence briefing last year that concluded the Saudi Crown Prince had ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Prince Mohammed has said he has taken responsibility for the murder, but he claims he did not order the killing. The Biden administration is not formally a party to the case, but was invited to weigh in on the matter. It had been given until 3rd of October by a judge hearing the Khashoggi case to respond to a series of legal questions about whether Prince Mohammed should be granted legal immunity, which traditionally is granted to a state's ruler, like a prime minister, a president, or a king. In its two-page filing on Friday, the Biden administration acknowledged it needed more time after already being granted an extension to settle the issue because Prince Mohammed's recent elevation to the role of prime minister in Saudi Arabia.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to safeguard your secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program and I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. Now in today's lesson, we are talking about how to safeguard your secrets. Every man has his secrets which he confines to himself alone. Therefore, he must safeguard such secrets because they are part of his personality. The secrets that you have are part of your personality wherever you are. He should not, reveal it to others so as to put himself in danger or even into contempt. Now, it is possible that some have confidence in others, thus reveal their secrets to them and put their destiny and reputation in the hands of others. A proverb states that a word is your possession or is your possession, but if it leaves from you, you become its possession. It is possible that a man may need to consult some of his friends on some matters related to himself. Therefore, he seeks their advices and help toward that particular matter. However, their legal and moral duty is to preserve and safeguard such secrets because it is a trust. This kind of advice is allowed because it is based on confidence and interest. Others have the habit of, simplicity and talkativeness. They talk about all that is within them and to whoever they meet. They just say it openly. They're not keeping it inside them. And others are of the habit of safeguarding secrets if they are in good with you. But they will reveal all your secrets when your relationship with them becomes sour. You're giving them your secrets. He's your friend. You're telling them. You're seeking advice from them. But then after some time, your relationship, becomes bad. And the person, starts sharing your secrets just like that. He starts saying everything that he's saying outside. So definitely this shows that it's better for anyone to safeguard their secrets whenever they are, and only reveal them to the very own people that he feels they can, you know, hold their secret and not share it to others, because that is part of your personality. If it's shared badly, if someone uses it badly in a bad manner, definitely it's going to destroy your personality.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's program, we're talking about how to safeguard your secrets. We've just said that safeguarding your secrets is among the best actions you could do in your life in order for you to preserve your personality, to make sure that it's not destroyed in life. Because others might use your secrets, which you tell them. You know, you'll be going around telling people your secrets, and they might use it against you or get something from you. And this happens when their condition turns from good to bad. You might be in a good condition before, but then when it turns to bad and you give them your secrets, they're going to use it badly on you. So likewise, among people, there are those who can never safeguard their secrets. You know, they're careless on the reputation and, you know, personalities of others. Whenever they hear something from their friends, they quickly transfer it to others. They are so easy to share it to others. How many people become victims of revealed secrets and lose their reputation in front of the society, in the society, or were faced with different problems? Because a secret may be about something bad which comes from someone due to his ignorance and mistake. The Almighty Allah covers the secrets of his servants and forgives them when they ask his forgiveness. Thus, when a man reveals his secrets, it is as if he portrays his personality and reputation to humiliation and danger. You become vulnerable. People will be talking bad about you whenever they want. Or maybe he cuts away to the correcting of his mistakes. Let's learn how to keep our secrets, because that way we are preserving our personalities. Thank you so much for listening to this program. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
A U.S. judge, Eileen Cannon, on Thursday, 29th of September, overruled the special master that she herself had appointed to review thousands of documents seized from Mar-a-Lago, shielding former President Donald Trump. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this news story. Please stay with us. The website Business Insider has more on this story. A federal judge, Eileen Cannon, on Thursday, 29th of September, spared former President Donald Trump and his lawyers from having to submit a sworn declaration about whether they believe the FBI inaccurately summarized the items seized from Donald Trump's South Florida home at Mar-a-Lago. Judge Eileen Cannon's ruling wiped away an early decision from the outside arbiter known as a special master she herself had appointed to review the more than 11,000 documents retrieved from Mar-a-Lago during an 8th of August search of Donald Trump's residence and private club in West Palm Beach, Florida. The special master, senior judge Raymond Deary, had ordered Trump's lawyers to address by 7th of October whether they contested the completeness and accuracy of the FBI's inventory of records discovered during the search. In a 6-page ruling, Judge Eileen Cannon said her order appointing Judge Deary did not contemplate that obligation for Trump's lawyers and the former president, who has repeatedly claimed without evidence that the FBI planted some of the highly sensitive documents seized from Mar-a-Lago. The decision plainly exposed power dynamics at play in the high-stakes dispute between Donald Trump and the U.S. Justice Department over records seized from the FBI's unprecedented search of a former president's home. While Judge Deary is closest to the review, Judge Cannon's decision marked a clear exertion of force over proceedings. Judge Cannon is reminding Judge Deary that the rest of us, that she is still in charge here, said Barb McQuaid, a University of Michigan law professor who served as a top federal prosecutor in Detroit during the Obama administration. She is essentially reversing Judge Deary's order requiring Donald Trump to put up or shut up about planted evidence. McQuaid told Business Insider, Judge Cannon's order permits Donald Trump to preserve that defense without any supporting facts, at least for now. Judge Deary, who was appointed to sift out records potentially covered by attorney-client or executive privilege, said Trump's lawyers could not suggest in court filings that the inventory of seized items was inaccurate without providing evidence in support of that claim. In ordering the sworn declaration, Judge Deary wrote, "This submission shall be Donald Trump's final opportunity to raise any factual dispute as to the completeness and accuracy of the detailed property inventory." Donald Trump filed a lawsuit on 22nd of August demanding that Judge Cannon appoint a special master to review records seized from Mar-a-Lago. In her time presiding over the case, Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee confirmed in 2020, has drawn criticism over rulings that legal experts have seen as showing unusual solicitude to the former president. The website Salon.com has more on this story. Judge Eileen Cannon on Thursday, 29th of September, overruled the special master she appointed herself to review thousands of documents seized from Mar-a-Lago, shielding former President Donald Trump from addressing his claims that documents may have been planted or declassified in court. Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee in Southern Florida, issued an order extending the timeline of the review after Trump's lawyers objected to the expedited schedule laid out by Special Master Raymond Deary, who was chosen from a list proposed by Trump's lawyers. Under the new order, the review and any surrounding issues around Raymond Deary's rulings will almost certainly stretch into next year, according to the website Politico. Judge Eileen Cannon, who has served on the bench for less than 2 years, also overruled Raymond Deary, a Reagan appointee who has served for 36 years, on his requirement that Donald Trump assert whether the FBI's inventory of seized items is accurate, effectively challenging his public claim that FBI agents may have planted evidence. There shall be no separate requirement on plaintiff at this stage prior to the review of any of the seized materials, to lodge ex ante final objections to the accuracy of defendant's inventory, its descriptions, or its contents. The court's appointment order did not contemplate that obligation, Judge Cannon wrote. She wrote that if any issues rise during the review that require reconsideration of the inventory or the need to object to its contents, the parties shall make those matters known to the special master for for appropriate resolution and recommendation to this court. Judge Cannon also rejected other parts of Raymond Deary's plan for the review, giving Trump's lawyers additional weeks to assert whether they believe any documents are covered by attorney-client privilege or executive privilege. If Judge Cannon was going to continue calling every ball in Donald Trump's favor, I'm not at all sure why she felt the need to appoint a special master to review the documents the government seized from Mar-a-Lago, tweeted Joyce Vance, a former U.S. attorney. No real surprises here. The name of the game is delay. Judge Cannon countermanded Judge Deary's streamlined schedule and helped Donald Trump advance his usual delay game in litigation. That means it could be late December before the Department of Justice can use documents it recovered from Mar-a-Lago. Judge Cannon previously came under criticism for repeatedly siding with Donald Trump in the case. Cannon's initial order barred the Justice Department from continuing its criminal investigation into the documents and ordered documents marked classified to be included in the special master review and shared with Donald Trump's lawyers. A federal appeals court overturned those rulings, arguing that she had abused her discretion and that Donald Trump was not even attempted to show that he has a need to know the information contained in the classified documents. We here at IRIB English Radio express our sincere condolences to all our Muslim listeners on the occasion of 8th of Rabiul Awwal, the martyrdom anniversary of the 11th infallible successor to the Holy Prophet of Islam, Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is Taqwa, Thursday the 2nd of Ramadan, 1394, 19 September, 1974. We should never forget the importance of right action and just rely on uttering nice words and thinking nice thoughts. Therefore, forgiveness means to heal the wounds of the human soul. By mending these tears, the human being attains perfection. This means that forgiveness is something that we should strive for, something we should compete to obtain, and something we should hasten towards. Divine forgiveness is very important. Divine forgiveness is not something that God bestows arbitrarily, according to whim or caprice. He does not make someone the object of his kindness unless that person has striven to become worthy of that kindness and hasten towards your Lord's forgiveness and a paradise as vast as the heavens and the earth prepared for the God-weary. Sometimes we might say someone belongs in paradise or that they will definitely go to paradise, and we sincerely hope that we are people destined for paradise. In all of our supplications, we ask Allah to grant us paradise. and sometimes we are not content with merely asking for paradise.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We count out the blessings we want from it, one by one. We ask Allah for the Hurul Ain, for its food, the meat of its birds, and the like thereof. However, it is none other than Allah Himself who says that this paradise is for those people who have taqwa. This feast has been prepared especially for them, and only they will enter this place and sit at this table. So if we want to enjoy this feast, we too must be people of taqwa. Who are the people of taqwa? Prepared for the God-weary. Pay close attention to the words of these verses. Prepared for the muttaqeen means those who have taqwa. Who are those who have taqwa? Those who spend in ease and adversity. Those with taqwa are those who spend in infaq. To spend is a condition of having taqwa. And what does spending in this sense of infaq mean? This is something we have discussed in earlier lessons, but there is no problem in repeating it here so that these words become engraved upon your hearts. Infaq is more than spending in the ordinary sense of the word. To spend ordinarily means that a person spends some money for some reason. Infaq is also spending, but it is not just any kind of spending.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Energy, housing, and soaring prices across the board. Britain's cost of living crisis is worsening and people are suffering. Giovanni and his wife are two of over 1,000 protesters greeting the Conservative Party conference here in Birmingham.
They don't care about ordinary people. They just want to hold on to power and maximise their own purses and get as much money out for themselves as they possibly can. It's despicable.
Conservative Prime Minister Liz Truss's government has nailed its colors to the mast. Tax cuts favoring the rich, business enterprise zones, and billions to slow the rise of household energy bills, which have gone up again this week. But all of it uncosted, sending the markets into a meltdown. How will British taxpayers afford it?
People are absolutely terrified about what's going to happen to their mortgages. They're terrified about their energy bills. They're terrified about, generally, the cost of living. And yet, at the same time, for those on over £150,000 a year, they're going to get much better off as a result of this.
The PM has pledged her government will keep an iron grip on national finances as part of her commitment to sound money. The subtext, looming cuts to already struggling public services.
They always say that we've got to pay the price for their problems. They created these problems. They create the wars, they create the shortages, and then workers are meant to pay for that and divide ourselves amongst each other. We're not going to have that.
But Liz Truss and Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng say they're determined to hold their nerve, promising a medium-term fiscal plan and independent analysis. Not now, but in November. As Birmingham hosts the conference, the Welsh and Scottish administrations have demanded a crisis summit, while the Labour Party, now with a 33-point lead in the polls, says a government appointed solely by party members has no mandate.
The UK is in a financial crisis. Protests such as this one are drawing more and more people onto the streets nationwide, meaning the pressure on this government to deliver beyond the conference walls is reaching boiling point.
Liz Truss has never had a problem charming the party faithful, but it won't be just her allies watching. Grassroots pressure is rising. Change is on the horizon. Saeed Puriza, Birmingham.
Afghanistan is still reeling from Friday's bomb attack in a Shia neighborhood in Kabul that left dozens of people dead and scores of others wounded. One of the victims of the attack was 18-year-old Najiba, whose family is grieving her loss. Najiba's father says he had raised his daughter with great difficulties, but lost her in the blink of an eye.
I've had a great passion in educating my children. I'm illiterate, but love to see my children educated. However, I'm an ordinary worker, but I always supported them throughout their school with everything they needed. My daughter, Najiba, was so smart and intelligent. I was proud of her and loved her so much. I feel heartbroken that I'm not seeing her future and I've lost her forever.
Sakina Surosh, Najiba's sister and a social activist, says that systematic attacks on Shia mosques and schools must end. She calls on the UN to recognize such attacks as massacre.
My demand from the international bodies, especially the UN, is that the latest attack on Khaj Educational Center and other onslaughts on Shia community must be recognized as massacre and Hazara genocide. These attacks are systematically targeting innocent people from a specific ethnic group. The UN should not neglect in this regard and must take practical steps to protect persecuted Hazaras.
Beside international bodies and human rights groups, Afghanistan Shia Clerics Council has called for an investigation into such attacks. The council called on the global community to end their silence on the murders of Shia Hazaras in Afghanistan.
Afghan clerics strongly condemn the attack on education and innocent students. We seriously call on the Taliban to take urgent and practical actions for ensuring security for all, especially Hazara people. The organizers and financers of such crimes should be brought to justice. The international community must end their silence on the plight of Hazara people in Afghanistan.
Rights groups say the Daesh terrorist group has been responsible for 13 attacks against Hazaras since the Taliban's return to power. The attacks have killed or wounded at least 700 people from the community. The latest bomb attack has shocked people here. They are calling on the international community not to turn a blind eye on the plight of Shia Hazaras in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Palestinians held a mass rally in the blockaded Gaza Strip to support Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds in the face of growing Israeli aggressions against the Holy City. People shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries on Israel's crimes in Al-Quds. Tensions have been on the rise in recent weeks as extremist Israeli settlers and Israeli forces desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We're sending a clear message to the whole world that the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people are in a constant battle against the Israeli enemy and will not remain silent over aggressions against Al-Aqsa.
People from all walks of life gathered to express their support for resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks.
People in Gaza are attending this rally to affirm our support and full backing for the Palestinian resistance. We believe that armed resistance is key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it